From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Before I introduce this week's guest for Naps Chat, permit me to share some newsworthy items. Last week, while Naps conducted its 2026 legislative conference, Postmaster General David Steiner and Government Accountability Official David Maroney testified before the House Subcommittee on Government Operations on the financial and operational status of the Postal Service. By the way, Naps Chat listeners may recall that David Maroney was a Naps Chat guest earlier this year. His visit is still available on our podcast platform. At the hearing, both Davids, that is Steiner and Maroney, provided a sobering accounting of the Postal Service and projected that the agency could run out of cash within the next 12 months. In addition, Amazon announced that it planned to reduce by two-thirds the amount of its parcels carried by the Postal Service. This cut could cost the Postal Service about $4.5 billion in lost revenue. In addition, due to inflated fuel costs, it has been reported that the Postal Service will impose an 8% surcharge on parcels beginning in April and running through next January. So the Postal Service is once again confronting turbulence. With me today to talk about these issues and the turbulence, including issues confronting the Postal Service's last mile network, is Brian Renfro, president of the National Association of Letter Carriers, AFL-CIO. President Renfro presides over the largest of the four postal unions and in 2022 was elected the youngest president in the NALC's 137-year history. Welcome to Naps Chat, Brian.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be with you.
I have to ask you at the outset, this is rather unique. The president of the NALC being a guest on a podcast sponsored by the association representing supervisors, managers, and postmasters. Could you talk about why you're here?
Good question. And I suspect that the members of my union that may be listening are asking the same question. But the answer is really very simple. Look, when it comes to many of the issues that we are dealing with the future of the Postal Service and its status as a public service and legislative policy changes that need to go into effect to make it a little more sustainable in the future, whether it's the letter carriers I represent, the supervisors you represent, or any other postal employees, we all have the same stake in that future. And, you know, for that reason, we've worked together for many years on Capitol Hill on a lot of different issues surrounding the Postal Service, and it's arguably more important that we continue to do that now than it's ever been before.
Let me ask this question, because last year, as you may recall, NALC hosted quite a few rallies around the country, the clarion call being fight like hell.
Yep.
And postal supervisors had mail for all. You spoke at our rally. Ivan Butz, our president, spoke at your rally. It recalls of Ben Franklin's, a quote attributed to him, that we must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly, we will all hang separately. You mentioned it a couple moments ago, but how important is it for postal employees to stick together in this fight?
It's very important. When it comes to either defeating proposals that would be harmful to the Postal Service long term, or hopefully advancing legislative policy changes that would benefit the Postal Service, it's important to get as many, if not all, of the stakeholders on board. Those stakeholders include, of course, all of us, the postal employees, as well as a number of other folks. But it's probably most important that we are all aligned so that a united front is presented for the legislators that will be making those decisions.
How many letter carriers are there right now?
So our union has about 295,000 members. That's active and retired. We have a little over 200,000 active letter carriers working for the Postal Service.
Do you find that the number of letter carriers growing or diminishing?
It's remained fairly steady over the last several years. As a lot of your listeners and members will be aware, we have some locations that for the most part are isolated where We face some pretty serious staffing challenges, but from an overall national perspective, that number's remained pretty steady in recent years.
Now, as you know, Brian, I worked at the letter carriers in the 1990s mm-hmm. for about 7 years for revered NALC President Vinnie Sombrato. While many of the postal issues, particularly in the legislative arena, are reoccurring, mm-hmm. we constantly have to fight the same issues, new legislative challenges have emerged since you rose to the NALC presidency. And you spoke about them at a recent Congressional Postal Caucus roundtable, where we also participated, postal supervisors. Could you talk about the new challenges that we may not have anticipated in the past?
Yeah, there's, as you said, some challenges remain the same. Congress is pretty good at recycling bad ideas, so we see those things pop up from time to time. But I think as we sit here today, the goals that we all have going forward are to enact positive change to things such as the way we're able to invest our money and our borrowing authority and those type things. But also, we have to defeat those bad ideas. And you mentioned just a couple of minutes ago the rallies that we all held, I guess, about a year ago around the country. And that's a prime example of that, where there was some action that, frankly, was very close to happening from very early on in the Trump administration to make some drastic changes to the Postal Service that, if enacted, would have triggered all sorts of legal fights and, in any scenario, really changed the Postal Service that we know today as a public service. So in many ways, bad ideas seem to always pop up again after a number of years. We have to be prepared to defeat those, but we also have to be prepared to constantly evaluate where we are, what those changes are at any particular point in time that need to be made, and work to build bipartisan support and hopefully find an avenue to advance that type of legislation.
You mentioned bipartisan support, and I noticed in a press release that the NALC just released with regard to the nomination of the Board of Governors mm-hmm. that was referenced to the precedent in the Senate of pairing nominees. That is, you have maybe one Democratic nominee, one Republican nominee, or in this case, maybe where you have the president being from one party, maybe 2-to-1 mm-hmm. ratio. It's not clear that the current flock of nominees is bipartisan. One of the few powers Congress, and particularly Senate, has to oversee the Postal Service is the confirmation process. Mm-hmm. How involved should we be as stakeholders in the confirmation process, in vetting nominees?
I think we have to be very involved. I think that includes for us engaging the leadership of both parties in the Senate, regardless of which party is in control at any particular point in time. And, you know, the way we see it is not to enter into, you know, when a nomination happens to, you know, draw necessarily some immediate opinion of support or opposition. I think it's more about understanding who the nominee is, what are their qualifications, and what can they bring to the board. Because as you mentioned, it really is, aside from enacting legislation, which, you know, doesn't happen a whole lot these days in this Congress, the confirmation of nominees, whether it's to the Board of Governors or it's to the Postal Regulatory Commission, is one of the primary ways that the Congress has of shaping the leadership, the oversight. In this instance, you asked about the Board of Governors, the governance of the Postal Service. So I think it's very important that in our role of representing all the postal employees, that we do a very fair evaluation of those nominees and engage with those that are in charge of that process in the Senate.
Now, I'm sure you heard, probably watched the testimony offered by Postmaster General David Steiner at last week's postal hearing. What is your takeaway from that hearing?
I would say, I've been asked this question a lot. I would say overall, I think he did okay. I think he did a pretty good job of outlining those legislative policy changes, really three primary ones that we have long advocated for. Increasing their borrowing authority, the way they're able to invest, or in this case not invest, all the billions of dollars they've set aside for retirement, and then, of course, the way the Office of Personnel Management calculates our obligation to the civil service retirement system. At the same time, I think he said some things that primarily were responses to questions about things like non-career employment, you know, advocating for some changes in workers' compensation and the way that's administered. Obviously, you know, with our members, we are adamantly opposed to any sort of limitations or reductions on you know, employees that get injured, the benefits for employees that get injured on the job. But overall, I think he did okay because it was a congressional hearing. He did outline the things that Congress could do to help us. And hopefully, you know, that's it certainly raised the profile of the issue a little bit in terms of media coverage. So hopefully we can continue to advance those reforms that are needed and find a way to move them through this very difficult Congress.
He characterized certain obligations the Postal Service has, like six-day delivery, which was a long and hard-fought victory for postal employees, and particularly for letter carriers, both city and rural. Maintenance of small post offices, uniform rates, serving residents of remote areas such as Alaska and Hawaii as so-called anchors, weighing down the Postal Service. Would you characterize those obligations as anchors?
No, I would characterize them as that's what makes a what the differentiation between a business and a public service. And, you know, we are a public service that is expected to run like a business, but I think a really integral part of the service we provide is just a simple fact that we provide it everywhere, and we provide it everywhere at the same cost. So the way we view some of the things that were brought up, like, you know, you mentioned six-day delivery, which was a hot topic around here for decades, ever since I was a little kid, to be very honest, until just a couple of years ago when it was permanently enacted into the law. I think it's proven that reductions in service are really not the way to go. If you laid out a menu of things to save the Postal Service money and grow revenue and put them in a better position long term, service cuts, in our view, would be very low on that list. It's also a little bit ironic, I guess, that when we talk about whether it's tribal areas or Alaska, as you mentioned, sometimes the places that can be viewed as, you know, quote, anchors, or the services that we provide that can be viewed or described as anchors or not cost effective, are the very people that need the Postal Service the most. So the model is as a universal public service means that we serve everyone everywhere. So I view it as not only is that it's incorrect to characterize them that way. I think the service we provide to those locations is really important to, you know, ensure that long term the public service we're able to provide continues at the same level. If we can serve those places, we can serve everywhere.
I'm going to come back to something you mentioned that's about revenue generation. Mm-hmm. The Postmaster General at the hearing promoted a 90 to 95 cent first class stamp to avert the so-called fiscal cliff. Such a price is not likely to be embraced by the mailing community or by members of Congress because their constituents are going to complain. Is that a reasonable request? And what other options are available for generating revenue?
Yeah, I think it's probably not reasonable to make that large of a jump. I do, however, think that the Postal Service does need some level of rate flexibility just to give them the ability that look, when costs go up, revenue has to go up. But the answer is certainly not to just raise prices a significant amount in a short period of time. As far as the question of what is a reasonable rate increase, rather than putting a number, which I do not pretend to be an expert on, I do think that there's a few things that have to be considered. And the first thing to me is the Postal Service is in a place where it is sorely in need of investment. It's in need of investment in its infrastructure in terms of buildings, in terms of continuing the vehicle project that's in place, further technology, maybe most importantly, people. And that's not exclusive to the craft that I represent. I think that investment piece has been missing for many years in the discussion about rates. It is very reasonable, in my view, that when it comes to any sort of rate setting process, all the things that should be considered, it should go beyond just the present as any business would, because we have seen over the last year or so, when we look at the Postal Service's financial results from last year, we see a large red number, which is of course concerning when they lose $9 billion. Perhaps even more concerning than that dollar figure is the fact that parcel volume went down for the first time in a long time. Parcel volume outside of the Postal Service has not gone down. The use of e-commerce has not gone down. And what that says is that we are in a position where we have got to make investment to be able to compete for that business. Competition is good for the customer, but the Postal Service needs to be modernized. As every postal employee listening to this is very well aware, they can look at their experience locally. I think that should be a consideration, and I think it's entirely possible to find the right balance between revenue increases that are justified based on the present situation and the need to invest in the future without getting to a place where we have increases that become necessary because of a lack of action over a period of time. And to some degree, I think with the current system, that's likely where we are today.
Yeah, to some extent, the $3 billion that Congress appropriated to the Postal Service for the investment in new generation vehicles, particularly vehicles, delivery vehicles, was a way in which to retrofit our current fleet mm-hmm. in order to accommodate a greater influx of parcels. But Amazon, I think, now has surpassed the Postal Service mm-hmm. in the volume of parcels. So we're number two. I guess we try harder, mm-hmm. as the old Avis commercial went. But we need to reclaim that volume. Now, as I mentioned in the intro, that Amazon is pulling away from the Postal Service. Should the Postal Service make an attempt to win them back?
I think Amazon is historically has been a huge customer. The volume that we have delivered for Amazon over the years has really been an excellent baseline, if you want to view it that way, for parcel volume. And I think that the Postal Service should do everything it can do to get Amazon's business. The scenario we're in now, most of your listeners would probably be aware of that Postmaster General Steiner has put in it's called an auction process, which I'm not going to sit here today and draw judgment on it one day or the other. It's new. It's different. We will see about its success or failure, but I think it's fair to say that that hindered their ability to come to agreement on a service agreement with Amazon. That's been reported in the news. That's no secret to anyone. But I think whether it's Amazon obviously being the largest mailer, but the Postal Service has to be in a position to compete. And I think competing is there's a huge marketing element to it. It's negotiation with shippers. It's there's a lot of pieces. And Amazon's just a tremendous volume generated. There's no reason in the world that the best delivery network we have in America that goes everywhere, you know, would not have a significant portion of that volume. So I would 100% hope that we can continue working down that road, despite maybe, you know, there's been some news reports out there about withdrawal and stuff like that. That would be volume that we could get back, because we need that volume as well as volume from other mailers.
Should the Postmaster General, as part of his pitch, not only to Amazon but to the American public in terms of the customers who are purchasing from Amazon, promote postal employees as being the most trusted employees in the United States, which we know they are? Mm-hmm. I mean, letter carriers and every other postal employee take an oath upon accepting the satchel mm-hmm. or whatever, or to getting the keys to their mail vehicle. Mm-hmm. Should that be part of the equation?
I think it absolutely should. I mean, postal employees, you know, obviously I'm partial to the letter carriers I represent, who are the face of the Postal Service to so many, but I think that's a tremendous value to any customer, including Amazon. And the fact that Amazon, as a mailer, you get from the Postal Service the same face, the same service, the same trust everywhere, you know, no matter where you go. So that absolutely should be part of that conversation.
As you know, the Postal Service recently retained the services of a turnaround and restructuring company. And the White House, we were talking about this just a couple of minutes ago, nominated an individual who was a founding executive from a turnaround firm. Should we attribute this to coincidence?
Yeah, I think it could range from, I guess, possibly being coincidence, but probably not, to a plan that's was put in place long ago, or an idea. I think it's probably somewhere in the middle. Our history and experience going all the way back to, I guess, probably the best point of comparison would be post-recession, you know, the 2009, 10, 11 period. Restructuring firms make recommendations. I suppose it will be a little bit interesting to see what types of recommendations they make, but I honestly would be surprised if they make recommendations that are much different than the things that we have seen from similar actions or studies and that sort of stuff in years past.
It's funny that you mentioned that, Brian, because I could recall in 2010 in the auditorium of the National Transportation Safety Board where we were briefed on the findings of not one, but three consultants that were retired by then Postmaster General Jack Potter, the McKinsey Group, Boston Consulting Group, and Accenture. And they all made recommendations. Some of were adopted, some weren't adopted. But we've been there before, as you point out. So should we get excited by this the retention of this turnaround firm?
Excited's not the word I would use. But I also think that there's nothing wrong with having someone, you know, sort of an outside point of view. I just think that our experience will tell us, look, as everyone listening to this knows, the Postal Service is a very unique organization. The service we provide is unique. Not that we're the only complicated organization, but I do think it's very difficult for someone from outside to come in and, you know, be able to drill down into the operational side of things that in order to make such a recommendation as they've been tasked with making. I think it's really difficult to gain that understanding. But, you know, we'll see what they come up with, and hopefully, you know, it's something that supports our efforts and rather than hinders them. But there's certainly plenty of reason for skepticism based on the experiences we've had with similar organizations or similar companies in the past.
Yeah, we had a president's commission on the on postal reorganization under Bush. We had, on Trump one, we had the president's task force. We have GAO reports. We have IG reports. The Brookings Institute recently is engaged on the universal service obligation and a couple of other issues. I mean, there was a lot of studies out there. And as I've been saying, there's really nothing new under the sun.
No, there's nothing new. And we, you know, sometimes we have to look at what and who motivates such studies and not just what motivates them, who pays for them even sometimes. So, look, there's absolutely, there's no question that the Postal Services we sit today, the work we do compared to when the vast majority of our network, both processing and delivery, was created, the work we do is very different. You know, the mix of mail is very different. The needs of the customer, I think, have evolved with e-commerce. So as I mentioned earlier, I don't think there's any doubt that there's investment and modernization that's needed, but that's got to be done as a growth strategy, I think, in combination with policy reform that Congress could enact, as opposed to, you know, some sort of significant business model change that's going to make it sustainable in the future. And our history tells us that.
Yeah. When you were saying that, how things have changed, I recall sitting in when I was over working for NALC during one of the arbitration meetings. They were talking about bundling the mail and the six bundle, about how, and they were demonstrating how you put the mail between your fingers. We don't, I mean, I don't know if it's done that way anymore, but with everything that's going on, we're not talking about those issues as being priority issues. That has changed, which leads me to my final question. Looking into your crystal ball, what do you think the Postal Service will look like 5 years from now?
I will take a glass half full approach to this. My hope is 5 years from now that we will have some congressional action that has improved the long-term financial picture in terms of its obligations related to retirement and things like that. that the borrowing authority has been increased, that rates have been probably increased moderately in order to grow revenue, and the Postal Service has, through all of that, been given the opportunity to make that long overdue investment, and we're in a place where if we're not there in 5 years, we're at least moving at a pretty good pace towards having a processing and delivery network to meet the mail that we have today and meet the needs of our customers. And I think that's entirely possible.
The needs and expectations of our customers is paramount.
It is. Ultimately, that's who we serve.
I want to thank Brian Renfro for being our guest today. Brian Renfro is the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be with you.
And I want to thank NapsChat listeners for logging on. Please share NapsChat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
Write down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going.